Hello and welcome to Policy Pathways, a new podcast series focusing on the policy challenges of food, land, and water systems transformation. The project is brought to you by the CGIAR National Policies and Strategies Initiative, and it is produced by the International Water Management Institute. My name is Raissa Okoy. I'm a journalist based in Dakar, Senegal. Today, we're talking about the National Policies and Strategies Initiative Policy Coherence Report for a country that I admire so much, Kenya. The report is about to be published, and we're talking about some of the key issues it touches upon. Joining me for this conversation is Dr. Joseph Karugia, Principal Scientist at the International Livestock Research Institute. He's the co-author of the Kenya NPS report, along with agricultural economist and policy expert Boniface Mburu, who is also joining us today. And last but not least, Dr. Lilian Kirimi, Senior Research Fellow at the Tegemeo Institute of Agricultural Policy and Development, a policy research institute at Kenya's Egerton University. Welcome to you all. At the heart of East Africa, Kenya is one of the most advanced economies on the continent. But just to give our listeners a brief overview, Boniface, please tell us a little bit about the economy and geography of Kenya, and how would you sum the country up?
Thank you very much, Riza. Kenya has diverse geographical features ranging from the coastal plains, highlands, and savannas, with both the Great Rift Valley and the equator running right through its center. The country has mixed dynamic economy with a GDP of about $115 billion per year. And this makes it the fifth largest economy in sub-Saharan Africa. Agriculture is a vital sector, employing half of the population and contributing about 20% to the gross domestic product, particularly crops and livestock. Politically, Kenya adopted a devolved constitutional system in 2010 that divides governance between the national government and 47 counties. This system aims to decentralize power and resources, with the counties responsible for delivering essential services such as agriculture, water, and health, where the national government oversees policymaking and regulation. However, challenges such as infrastructure gaps and unemployment still persist, but Kenya continues to show resilience and potential for growth. And it is also recognized globally for its environmental conservation efforts and serves as the headquarters for the United Nations Environmental Programme.
Thank you, Boniface. I will turn to Joseph. Joseph, Boniface has mentioned that agriculture is a vital sector and contributes half the GDP of Kenya, but it also seems to be a diverse sector, ranging from traditional pastoralists to large-scale agribusiness, including cut flowers and horticulture. Are there areas where modern or industrial farming practices dominate in Kenya, or are we still talking about small-scale agriculture?
Yeah, thank you, Raisa. Yes, more than half of Kenya's GDP is from agriculture, split almost in half between primary agricultural production and output from linkages with manufacturing, distribution, and services sectors. Most of the agriculture is actually small scale, with about 8 million smallholders that account for about 80% of the agricultural output. These small-scale producers are mainly found in central Kenya, around Mount Kenya, the western part of the country, and some of the coastal areas. We do have large-scale farms and ranches that practice modern farming, and these are mostly in the Rift Valley region of the country. But we see the number of large farms declining over time, mostly due to subdivision. So a relatively diverse agriculture sector that ranges from traditional pastoralism to large-scale farming.
Thank you, Joseph. So if I can pick up on that point, Lilian, if we continue to look at diversity, I know that you have worked on gender equality in your research, so perhaps you can explain how critical are women to the agricultural sector. What is their major role these days, and are they increasing their presence in the sector, including commercial farming?
Thank you, Raisa. If you look at the 2023 FAO report on status of women in agri-food systems, that report indicates that agriculture and agri-food systems in general is a major employer of women Thinking about sub-Saharan Africa, the report indicates that 66% of women are working in agri-food systems compared to 60% of men. And those statistics differ between men and women across different regions. But although agriculture is critical for women employment and they play a critical role, that report also indicates that women are absent in the most lucrative parts of value chain or even agri-food system. And that's what we find even when we do deep dive studies in value chains in Kenya. Women's roles are marginalized and vulnerable. And you could describe their roles generally as irregular, informal, part-time, low-skilled, and even labor-intensive. And I would add that they are greatly underrepresented in commercial farming. And I think policy has a role to play in addressing some of these issues that cause women not to play a big role in comparison to men.
That's really interesting, Lillian. So we have talked a lot about agriculture, but obviously this sector relies on the availability and effective management of both land and water too. How important has policy development been in these sectors? Boniface, can you tell us what specific issues prompted NPS to produce this report on policy coherence?
First and foremost, Kenya has got a wide range of policies across these three sectors. This study, for instance, identified 27 national policy instruments in food, land, and water sectors. The main policy challenges facing Kenya's food, land, and water sectors actually stem from a lack of coherence among these 27 policies and strategies. While many of these policies aim to address sector-specific issues, the analysis showed contradictions and incoherences. For example, the 2009 land policy, which promotes land fragmentation, actually negatively impacts agriculture, because by promoting fragmentation, it is removing the possibility for commercial large-scale production from the system. If we take the example of the National Water Policy, which focuses on water conservation, although it does mention about the contribution of these water resources into the food production, actually, it is not clear how these two interact. There were also inconsistencies that we actually observed addressing water catchment protection and environmental health, social exclusion. And finally, the lack of consensus on national outcomes across the food, land, and water sectors further complicate policymaking and implementation.
I understand. Joseph, you co-authored the report, and can you expand on this point about the lack of coherence? How significant is this challenge, and how can it be resolved?
So policy incoherence is a real challenge. We recognize that ministries have mandates to develop policies, but it would seem that they focus on their functions rather than being guided by sectoral needs or issues and the interlinkages with other sectors. We do appreciate that food, land, and water systems issues by nature are intersectoral, and they cut across several ministries. So for policy coherence, the ministries need to work together. That, in our view, would require an overarching kind of policy or strategy with very clear sectoral goals and results, but also recognizes the inherent trade-offs between food transformation goals, water transformation goals, and land sector goals. And this is where good research evidence is needed to inform policy development. We also need, of course, a good monitoring and evaluation so that we can tell whether we are on course and whether the policies have actually delivered those objectives. And this makes the work that we are doing under the National Policies and Strategies Initiative quite relevant for Kenya.
You mentioned a strategy with clear goals for each sector. Can you tell us a bit more about that? How do you put them all together?
I think this should stem from a national development plan that it's clear about what the nation's development goals are, and then from that, highlighting what each sector would contribute. You can then ensure that the different departments align and develop their own sector strategies to contribute to those national goals. And if there are trade-offs to be made, there is a conscious decision to decide how to address the trade-offs. I mean, policies are never neutral, if I can put it that way. Policies have losers and winners. And you gain one, you lose one. So, and the role of policymakers is actually to make the choices that are optimal for the society that they serve.
Well, thank you, Joseph. Thank you for clarifying this. And if I turn to Lilia now, to what extent have regional or national Kenya government departments already taken action to address these issues? How timely is the NPS report?
I would think that regional governments, and here we are talking about the devolved units, the counties in Kenya, and the national government, have made efforts to deal with and address some of the issues we've raised. For example, we have the Intergovernmental Relations Technical Committee that brings together the national and county governments with the aim of supporting devolution. And I think that's a platform that would help to bring a focus and consensus on the national outcomes across the sectors. Secondly, the county governments themselves, they've also taken a regional approach to development and tackling the problems that they face in agriculture. They formed 6 regional blocks that help to tackle problems that are transboundary in nature, and those that could be similar or common across the geographies that form a block. But both governments are also doing a lot to support the realignment of policies to devolution that arose as a result of the 2010 Constitution. The NPS report is timely. I think this report highlights what other researchers have indicated, that for agriculture to prosper in Kenya, the county and national government must work together, must cooperate, must coordinate their activities to be able to bring development to the people. The report helps to tighten those loose ends that have been there in terms of policy coherence.
I think you've said it already. Counties and national government must work together, must cooperate and collaborate. So I guess you're already touching a little bit on the key findings of the report, but I want to ask Boniface, can you possibly pick up 2 or 3 of the key findings from the NPS Kenya report itself?
The key takeaways that emerged from this study is basically the importance of the new Kenyan constitution, the 2010 constitution, because it was a watershed moment for government policymaking. In particular, there are 3 areas that are very positive here. First of all, ensuring accountability, requiring that there has to be the monitoring and evaluation of policies before they are either adjusted or developed, and also stakeholder engagement. This is not without challenges because as a result of this, policies have become much more expensive, both to develop and to implement because of all these groups who have to be engaged. Secondly, stakeholder engagement is not always easy, and not all the stakeholders have the capacity to meaningfully contribute towards refining the policy or even knowing the possible implications of that policy once it is implemented. So, and when you bring on top of that the counties, which have also got legislative powers, and the diversity of the communities in Kenya, all these factors contribute towards complications when it comes to implementation.
Joseph, Lilian, do you share this view that the new Kenyan constitution has been a catalyst for change?
I think the key is the requirement for public participation in policy development. In the 70s and 80s, we more or less had development plans done at country headquarters, and then everybody had to implement those plans. Today, there is room to infuse evidence into policy making through the public participation process, but also citizens can take steps to block the implementation of policies that they feel they were not fully involved in their development. And the other thing is priorities differ by regions, and these are now easier to identify with devolved governance. I think the expectation is that devolved governments will be more attuned to the service needs and priorities of their citizens. So the Kenyan 2010 constitution, I think, is good for agriculture and food systems transformation.
Thank you, Joseph. Lillian, anything to add about that?
We see devolution as a catalyst for change because the devolved units have power and resources that can be responsive and well aligned to the needs of the citizens within these administrative areas. So if the county administration is open, is focused, we'll see better response to the needs that farmers have in the agriculture sector and even in the sectors that support agriculture. If they are focused, we can see great transformation in the sector.
Thank you, Lillian. So from what you're saying, there seems to be quite a lot of synergies between government and counties. So how can we take it further? Boniface, maybe you would want to respond to that.
One of the findings from this study is that the civil society themselves are handicapped. They may not have the personnel, but in most cases, government tends to give them very, very little time in which to digest the implications of the proposed policies and go out and get the views from across their membership and the different groups that they represent. So clearly, this study is actually suggesting that government needs to rethink. If they need meaningful support, meaningful contribution of these groups into these policies, that they need to look into how to help them to have the resources that they need in order to get to sort out these issues.
Yes, I think involving civil society as a recommendation, while it's very good, I think it may be longer to implement for several reasons. One, the civil society in Kenya is very diverse. People focusing on different sectors, and they also tend to operate in silos. So they are diverse, operate in silos. Some have narrowly defined objectives. Others deal with very broad issues. There are those that are focused on policy advocacy, and there are others that come into the mix with some negative discourse. So I think because of the nature, it may be very difficult to bring meaningful engagement of civil society. But their voice is critical, I would say.
If I could come in here, a lot of the findings of the study would seem to be addressed by the different structures, the different frameworks that the government has put in place. Nevertheless, incoherence is a reality. We had a validation workshop towards the end of last year, and there was great appreciation of the findings of the incoherence food, land, and water policies from the public sector, from private sector, from civil society organizations, and so on. So where is the problem? I think that's the key. Participation has to be meaningful to contribute. It is not an issue of bringing people to a forum, discussing a report that is more or less completed, and having them endorse without giving room for serious input and revisions to take place after that process. We also have ministries and departments that have overlapping mandates, and this persists. That makes for very difficult implementation of policies that we know are good, but implementation is a problem. So I can sum it up this way. Implementation of policies in Kenya needs to improve significantly for us to realize the benefits of the good policies that we have on paper.
Well, I don't know about all of you, but for me, that was a deeply interesting conversation. But sadly, that is all we have time for today. We look forward to the publication of the report. To find out more about what we have coming up in the series, please subscribe to the Policy Pathways podcast. Coming up on the series, we have conversations about Laos, Egypt, Nigeria, and Colombia. It just remains for me to thank our experts, Joseph Karugia, Boniface Mburu, and Lillian Kirimi. I'm Raisa Okoy. Studio production for Policy Pathways was by Wild Dog. Music was by Mark Peter Royce. Our series producer was Alan Nicol, and production was by Louisa Chandler Edmond for the International Water Management Institute. Our program editor was Andrew Johnstone. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.